love to see you all coming in. I want to congratulate you all because you got tickets to this event. We sold out the house today, guys. This is clearly a very hot topic. So I am super excited to get our discussion rolling today. Let me welcome everybody officially in. My name is Kalia Garrido. Thank you so much for joining us today. I head up marketing events here at Great Data Minds, which is now a Hi2 company. Great Data Minds is a collective of passionate data activists, and we are on a mission to modernize the world of data. We do this in two different ways. The first is that we have our services, strategic planning, education, the deployment of critical data projects, and this all happens over at Hike2.com. In addition to data services, Hike2 is a fully functional, best-in-class innovation consultancy, and we specialize in digital transformation strategy, design, and technical implementations. But when it comes to our data and analytics community, content, and conversation, you can always find us at greatdataminds.com. This is where we host our events. We run our videos and our podcasts with transformational thought leaders and innovative technologies, kind of just exactly like what we're going to go over today. So a little bit of housekeeping. We have a full house, a lot of you on the line today. This is a webinar, so of course your cameras and microphones are off. But we welcome your conversation. We would love to hear from you in the chat. You can also use the Q&A function. If you prefer to reserve your questions until the end of the session, we're gonna have some time set aside for that as well. So it's another option. And of course, we're gonna be recording today's session. So stay tuned for a follow-up email from us. Also go ahead over to our YouTube page and that's where you'll be able to find that video when it's totally said and done. So some introductions. Today, I am so excited to host the next episode in our podcast and YouTube series, and allow me to do some introductions for my esteemed guests. First, we have Todd McGuire. Todd is a technology executive with 25 years of experience leading product and technology teams in industries including e-com, healthcare, professional services, manufacturing, and hospitality. Todd has a long-standing proven track record of architecting and implementing technology roadmaps to successfully launch and deliver software as a service products from concept to market to full rollout. Also, Todd brings with him an extensive data and analytics expertise, designing and building actionable dashboards for managing sales operations and health research data. Todd, it's the dashboard help that and insights that we have you here today. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
Me too. And then my partner in crime over at Hike2 is Connor Dunning. He is going to lead our conversation today. He is a driven solution architect who excels at helping clients transform complex data landscapes into actionable insights. He plays at the forefront of analytics enablement and is busy connecting companies with their data. Connor, thank you for joining me. And of course, I'll pass the microphone to you.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you, Kalia. Thanks, everyone, for joining. Exciting topic today, diving into data visualization. And I think the key takeaway for today is that data visualization is not new. This has been around for a while now, but I think kind of what we see in the marketplace is, you know, hey, I built a dashboard, but no one uses it. Now what do I do? Right. So that's what we're here to kind of solve for today is, you know, building effective dashboards and solutions that are actually used to drive business decisions and drive business outcomes. So kind of getting into it, today we'll be covering, you know, use case discovery, uncovering the pain points of your end users, you know, what are the questions and decisions we're trying to solve for. And then after that, we'll kind of get into the different types of dashboards. So we have, you know, we have reporting the news, we have storytelling, we have discovery dashboards, we have self-service, kind of, you know, on and on, right? You know, how do I know what the right solution might be for the given use case? And then kind of we'll wrap it up around kind of a bunch of different best practices around visual design in your dashboards. And Todd will take us through, you know, a litany of different techniques he uses. So kind of getting into it, Todd, I want to kind of pass it over to you to kind of go into, you know, we've been working on projects together for some time now with some pretty big clients, kind of going into, you know, what I found super effective is kind of your unique approach to discovery, uncovering the pain points of your clients, kind of the use cases, what are the questions they're going after, you know, what are the different skill levels of my end users, right? You know, how do we get to an effective solution and a dashboard that sticks?
Perfect. Thank you, Connor. Yeah, the way I've structured the notes today, I wanted to start at the high level and really figure out if we're steering the ship in the right direction to get to a successful dashboard so you don't end up like my title on this slide here, where you spend all this time, you build something and it sits there collecting dust, you throw a party and nobody shows up. So to solve that problem, you got to figure out what you're doing in the first place. And then I'm going to get deeper and deeper and kind of finish up with some hands-on tactical best practices. But I want to begin with what you just brought up, which is how do you make sure what you build ends up being one of the most popular, most well-used pieces of data reporting for whoever your stakeholder audience is. So this is that flow I'm going to take us through. Really focus in the beginning on uncovering those pain or value points. Then I'm going to step a little bit deeper into the types of dashboards, because I think that has a big effect on what you build and how you build it and who the audiences are. And there's quite a lot of variety there. And then I'll finish up in those best practices. So for the first part, one of the simplest ways to avoid the biggest problem of building the wrong thing is just coming down to these three simple questions. And I've used this technique multiple times in almost every project I'm a part of. And it gets right to the root of what you should be building for whom. And when you get into the really challenging part of the arm wrestling around phases and what's in the MVP, what's not, what can you build first, second, and third, it's going to come down to these answers. So think of this as a script, as a insert the job title here of whoever the stakeholder is you're talking to. I need to do some objective so that I get to this value or this benefit or this pain point. That fundamental structure sounds really simple, and it is, but you can use it really as a North Star as you're going through one of these projects. And so here's a couple of examples, and I'll take you through a few different levels with a hypothetical organization. So maybe you're sitting down and you're fortunate enough to have the COO at the table. You're in the C-suite. Hopefully you've got that kind of visibility on your data project so that this is important, this is critical, you've got their attention. And you can see here, filling in that script, as a COO, I'm trying to track these sales and ops trends at these different levels in my organization to figure out, am I aligning my OKRs with my KPIs and steering this ship the right way? So that's a type of view that's going to be pretty different from some of your lower level users, but it's key to make sure you've got that captured. Then if you're moving through this journey a bit and you say, okay, I need to widen the net. I need to talk to other mid-level folks that are working on this, the operations of the company. So now maybe I'm talking to a regional lead and they say, yeah, I'm trying to identify, I'm managing 40 stores and everyone loves the ones that are doing well, but I've got, six or seven that are struggling. How do I figure out who they are and figure it out while we're still in flight in the quarter or the period, so I can, right this ship, I can make these changes and help my general managers get their job done. So you can see I'm getting more tactical here, but I'm using that same script. And then taking that down to the final level of the front line, if you will. And this is going to look different, whoever your organization is and your stakeholders, but maybe at the store level, the store general manager says, I know everyone's hammering me on hitting these KPIs. I need to be able to see this on my phone in the middle of the week to figure out if what I'm doing is moving the needle. So I'm using that same structure across different levels. And then you'll end up, the reality of this is you don't just get one quote from your stakeholder that you're meeting with. You're going to get a laundry list of things. So in this example, this region lead might have three or four or 10 different hot buttons. And that's going to lead to the need to, how do I prioritize this by the highest pain point or the highest value point, and maybe the easiest implementation route and the least friction so I can get an early win, my first MVP? That's, I think, often one of the hardest parts is getting that kind of universal sign off on what are we going to build and what's going to happen first. But this is really helpful to socialize what you're finding and get the entire team to kind of nod their heads and do some of that arm wrestling over, oh, this is important, or maybe this isn't important. So that's a key part of this. Another piece with this that I think is helpful for when you get to the deployment stage and you're trying to get people to use it is this helps you let the people feel like they're being heard, because they are. And that's going to factor in when you get down the line and people say, oh yeah, I know that they paid attention to that. It's not in this first release, but it's coming, because you as kind of a tech leader, it's tempting to try to boil the ocean and you bite off too much and you got to ratchet that down, but this will keep you on track for it. And it gets very tactical. Like here's, an example of putting one together. I'll just do this in a Google Doc. that's got, you know, many pages to it, but you can see where you can start taking the levels of your organization and then the conversations. And I'll use this in a meeting with individuals and just in a conversation. Take this in my notebook, take this on my laptop, but I'm starting to get at all the nuggets of value or pain. And you know, I use the pain points, but it's just the flip side of the coin of value, whichever way you want to call it. But this this becomes a living document. It gets circulated among the leadership team and as far down as it needs to go until everyone agrees that, yep, this is the right thing that we're going to build.
And I think me and Todd have seen a lot of traction with that approach, right? I mean, compared to just kind of getting a ticket that comes in through the backlog, hey, data team, we need a report that does X, Y, or Z. This really kind of lays out the full solution, what we're trying to solve for, you know, on a user level. And when we share this out to, you know, the executives we're working with, they're always kind of impressed with how much thought has gone into the solution, the dashboard. They didn't realize, you know, hey, we're taking into all these columns into account. Kind of feeding into that, Todd, you know, how do you manage, maybe you have conflicting needs from your stakeholders, right? You know, you have maybe a COO who needs this in the dashboard and a store manager who needs something else and a director needs, you know, mm-hmm. kind of their own view, right? How do you manage, you know, the conflicting needs?
Yeah, that always happens, Connor, as you know. Part of the way I like to try to solve that is, you know, kind of in this next section, taking what I found in those three level questions that I took everyone through on those pain points, distill it down into something like you see here on the left, you know, there's kind of that big yellow sticky of, this is what I'm hearing that's the universal trend at all different organizational levels. And because of that, this is where I think we're headed from a, just from a simple wireframe concept, you know, because that's where the wrestling begins around features that are included or not included and what's going to happen. And so I think this level lets you, you know, bring all kind of the things to the table that the family's going to argue about, but it does it in a mode where I haven't built anything yet. It's very easy to make these changes, but it lets all those voices come out and say, no, I'm really stressed out because I'm being managed to these KPIs and my general manager can't see it because they're on a phone. And yeah, that becomes a priority. And then you literally say, okay, does that resonate all the way up to the top level, to the COO, for instance? And I think that's where the battles will happen and the agreement, you know, ultimately comes to bear.
Yeah. And then kind of playing on that, Todd, you know, as you're going through your persona mapping, your requirement mapping, you know, understanding what the stakeholders' needs are, how do you go from, hey, I'm in this wireframe phase to I need to kind of settle on a specific dashboard type? Maybe the need is self-service. Maybe they want to report the news. Maybe they have Tableau or Power BI or ThoughtSpot, right? How do you kind of take your requirements and then, you know, kind of take it to the next step?
Yeah. No, that's a really good one, Connor. And it's a couple of ways I'll get into this. And this is a good segue into the next section. You know, going from those initial interviews and uncovering the pain points and getting into kind of storyboard ideas, you can see it in the bottom left. It starts to bleed into what you see on the right where, hey, we're getting now into, you know, perhaps medium fidelity prototypes. Still might not have picked a tool yet, but we're at the point of saying, if we could deliver this, is this going to solve the need in the field, in the C-suite, you know, wherever that stakeholder is? I think you need to get to this part first to get closure. Everyone wants to know exactly when you're going to get this done and, you know, have a fixed timeline and, you know, no uncertainty, which is, you know, impossible in this world and in many, many ways. So you need to say, well, let's have as much definition on the target as we can. Then we'll get into the dashboard styles and designs. And I think that's a perfect segue into kind of this next part, because in the life cycle of building one of these systems, I'll often go through three totally different types of dashboards to get to that final thing that people are going to use. And it just depends on, you know, which audience I'm talking about. And it's, you know, you can kind of think about it in three different levels. You've got this concept of discovery dashboards that are, they've got a lot in them. They're not for the unsophisticated, untrained user. I mean, they're kind of a power tool. You've got the middle of the road reporting. And I love your phrase, reporting the news. I mean, that's where you're locking it down from a leadership point of view, saying this is the single source of truth I want everyone managing the ship to. And it's not designed to have a lot of latitude. And then the final end of that, the storytelling mode, where you're getting to the point of saying, I want to just drive home this point and I don't want to expose all of the other data. Those all have a role and they're related to a couple of things, like how sophisticated the dashboard is. That's the bottom axis of this little chart, and how sophisticated your audience is. And, you know, it's hard to use the term like sophistication or expertise to think, you know, people are or not in that category. It's often more a function of how new is someone to the role in a company and just how much time have they had in the saddle. And so some of the things you might want to do just won't work for someone who's brand new. The training curve is too steep. And so if you think of these dashboard types and where you're going to put things, the discovery type of tools, and I'll show you a couple examples in a minute, those are for people with the most experience, and they can handle as many features as you you can give them. And you mentioned, you know, like ThoughtSpot as an example, where it's self-service, it's open-ended. It's the Swiss Army knife. You can do anything, but it can be overwhelming for someone who's, you know, been in the job for 4 weeks and is trying to, you know, manage to some KPI. So that middle level that starts to ratchet it down on reporting the news type dashboards, this is probably the most common thing we all do, and we all see, whether you're looking at something in Tableau or Power BI. Very functional, very useful. You know, the storytelling, it actually gets really simple and kind of primitive if in some cases. I'll show you an example of it here in a minute, but it can really work across a lot of different audiences. And I'll usually start here in that top right corner and use that to understand the shape of the data, understand what the possibilities are. That will funnel and narrow down into the reporting and probably what's going to be delivered. And then maybe in a you know, in a board meeting or in a media meeting, we might use a storytelling dashboard to just drive home one clear point very, very simplistically.
Kind of on that note, Todd, how often do you see dashboards, let's say, evolve from one to the other, right? Are you building like three dashboards here? Are you building a discovery dashboard for discovery use case and then a reporting dashboard for a report the news use case? Or do you sometimes see these dashboards evolve, you know, kind of down your chart here?
Yeah, good question. To me, and it's probably varies a lot by how your development style is, but I'll usually progress a dashboard from discovery through reporting and into storytelling, sometimes with the same bones and skeleton. And it's kind of like a garden where you've planted a bunch of things in that discovery dashboard, and then I'll pull out the mint that's going crazy and taking over the garden and just, you know, leave in the things that are salient. So it's often that playground discovery area gets pared back and narrowed down into become these other dashboards.
And then kind of off that, Todd, from like a technical constraint perspective, you know, what do you do if perhaps maybe the tool you're using or the data, you know, you're kind of working within, you know, maybe has some limitations around creating, let's say, a storytelling dashboard or discovery dashboard? Kind of what's your approach there?
Yeah. You know, that's where it definitely gets more into tool selection. And there are some tools, you know, for instance, in Tableau, there's a great feature called Story Points, where you can just structure almost an infographic with, you know, just three simple buttons that take you through and advance the visualization. And that might say, oh, that's going to be a great tool for this case. So I think that the closer you get to the final delivery and the final execution pushes you toward a preferred tool to cover that. And here's a couple of examples to kind of make it a little more concrete. You know, I'll start with some discovery examples. And one of the things, you know, if you look at what I'm calling out that might be common in a discovery dashboard is a lot more visual elements, way more than I would ever recommend to a general audience. But for someone who's a power user, who, like in this example, you know, this is a group of researchers that I've worked with. They're analyzing population health data over 100,000 people. You know, it's a different type of audience. So they want to see all sorts of dimensions and measures together and be able to explore it and play around with it and make, you know, everything a filter, if you will. And so if you look at this example, you know, here's a little clip of using this dashboard and going in, and I'll just kind of narrate. So in this case, they're trying to figure out how can we extend the weight loss duration of someone in a population health program. So here they're bringing in Fitbit data, and we're looking at step counts and saying, hey, when people get over 10,000 steps, wow, the weight loss duration doubled to 24 months and the weigh-in count went up. Okay, that's good. Another piece they're looking at here in the middle is there was a feature in this platform called Brag to Facebook that let people, as they're going through this obesity intervention, share their healthy selfie, the picture of themselves as they're going through this weight loss journey out on Facebook. And it was kind of an experimental feature that they weren't sure what it was going to do. But when they turned it on, people started using it. And then they started getting a lot of positive reinforcement from their peer group saying, man, Connor, you look amazing. What are you doing? Keep up the good work. So we brought that into the dashboard on the discovery dashboard. And here, when you go through and click I'll rewind this. So watch what happens when I filter on active on Facebook. The weight loss duration jumped up even more. The magnitude of weight loss increased. And even, this last piece over here, the starting BMI of this group surprised the researchers. This is an even higher risk audience than the average person. So this wasn't the fitness buff that's going off and showing off their body. This is just a normal average person that's trying to get support for that journey. So this was a big discovery dashboard, very overwhelming in many ways, but that was what the audience needed. Let me
And that's where you have your dynamic filtering, your drill down, some common features we see across kind of all the tools these days, right? That everyone's asking for.
Exactly. Yeah. Everything in a discovery dashboard, I make every visual element a filter. So you can go in any direction and see, what are women in the 40 to 64 age group in this geography struggling with, and this is another example of a discovery dashboard that led to some interesting, it became into the reporting dashboards. The hypothesis was the reason people were joining this program is that it's a medical concern and they need to lower their BMI. But when we surfaced all the data, that was the least popular motivator. And the biggest motivator was, I want to change how I look and feel and fit into my old clothes. And that really turned the research team on their head. Like, they didn't anticipate that, but that came out of the of kind of that discovery mode. And then it moved into kind of storytelling mode, where then they started saying, hey, this one feature of the platform, which is a common thing, like in anyone who's building software, you're trying to figure out what's engaging, what's resonating. Then they tunneled it down into a storytelling mode, very narrow, and said, look, when we do a matched cohort of people that share socially their success and people that don't, look at all the health benefits. The weigh-in count went up, the duration of effect went up, the magnitude of effect went up. So that's a good example of, it started as a wide open discovery tool, and it became a very narrow, kind of a steering device for what they were doing in the research. Moving into the middle category, the reporting, this is the most common one. So this is where I don't want to filter necessarily on everything, and I don't want to get my low-level field staff off track and creating a view of the data that isn't aligned with what we're trying to solve for as a overall, OKRs and KPIs of the company. And so in this case, you have perhaps less interactivity, still a lot of interactivity on filtering, maybe fewer visual elements, and you're organizing it. And I'm going to talk about some data, kind of best practices. There's a lot of thinking into how this is organized. But this is, very different from discovery and different from storytelling. It's still an operational tool to steer the ship on. But it's kind of tightened up a bit, and you want to keep everyone, in the same lane. And then the last example I'll show in the storytelling category is an extreme case. Where I showed that graph of how sophisticated your user is or how comfortable they are interacting with an interface. Here's one just looking at the changing demographic of the age groups in the country over the last 50 years. And in this example, just using the animation features built into Tableau, you can just go through and without the user having to know how to do anything, they can just see, oh wow, we're getting older as a group. It's one message, it's very straightforward, but that's a visualization approach. And at some points, that's what you need to do. You might be making a board meeting where you're trying to get down to a strategic direction, and this is our conclusion. We're doing a product design, for instance. So that's kind of the way I look at the landscape of what you're about to build. Is this for discovery for power users? Is this reporting for the majority of the team and you're trying to keep people on the same page? Or might this be that storytelling that's a narrow, targeted view?
And I think it's real important to break out the difference, Todd, because I think we hear, people bashing about, I want to be able to drill down and story tell, but, something like a reporting dashboard might be the most effective solution, that single source of truth where we can manage the business. And then we know on the other flip side, right, like, what's the story, what's the outcome, right? That's kind of where, all these different dashboards serve a different purpose. But kind of going into that, and where I think, we'll probably get some Q&A, or I'm sure probably a lot of the designers and developers out there, we're going to get some values kind of going into some of your tactical design best practices, right? Around, using a Z pattern, color coding, inclusion, exclusion, et cetera, right? So maybe we can get into some of that.
Yeah, exactly. It's a perfect segue into some of these best practices, and a good leaping off point for that, and to kind of wrap up this type of dashboard discussion is, a common pattern I see is as a developer, you're tempted to use all the features you have and bring as much firepower to the table. And you kind of push out on this spectrum a bit. And then you end up, and I've just seen this in client settings where they'll take me through a tour of all these dashboards that they already have. And I look at them and I'm just blown away. I'm like, that took a lot of work to build. But then they say no one's using it. They don't even understand what it's trying to do. And it's definitely not suffering from having enough functionality, enough features, and enough data. It's almost suffering from it's perhaps the wrong type of dashboard for the wrong audience, where someone's coming in, they've got 10 minutes, they're in a hurry, and they're trying to just, like you're saying, you know, report the news and get to it. So I think that's a bit of the art is figuring out, you know, what features to use, what features to not use, based on the given point you're at.
And maybe before we go into kind of those design best practices, Todd, just kind of, you know, speaking to Kava and some of our other accounts, you know, just kind of how do you know when your dashboard's hitting the mark and when it's not?
You know, there's a number of ways you can do it, but one of the best ones is just in, depending on the tool you're in, you can do analytics reporting on traffic to the different dashboards and into the different elements of the dashboards. And so we can go in and see, you know, where it's resonating. And it's almost like a stock chart, and I can see what's performing the best and what's performing the worst. And I've seen cases where following this approach and then going in and looking across a collection of 70 different dashboards, some of the stuff we've built is at the top of the list because it's just really hitting the pain points. It's really hitting the value points, and it's and people are able to use it. So I think you should look at that. It's kind of like a very meta concept of analytics on your analytics to see, you know, what's the most popular. And also a strange, you know, kind of back feature way is if you start getting a lot of either feature upgrade requests or somebody notices something that's not right. I mean, you know, you want to get sort of that squeaky feedback that, hey, this thing isn't just sitting in obscurity and no one's complaining about it, but no one's using it. You want the tool that's getting a lot of tickets raised over it, because, you know, I think as we all know in building software, you're never done. It's never bug free. It's never perfect. But if you're finding people are using it and they're noticing things or they're wanting more, putting on your backlog, you know, you're on the right track.
And I got one question actually out there from the audience there, Todd. Let me ask this and see if you can digest this. So this is from Scott in the audience. Any best practices for building a dashboard for a leader that wants to see metrics in a digestible way for them? You know, for example, say they are a process-oriented engineer that may fully understand business process and engineering, but they don't have much insight into sales or networking metrics that are on that dashboard. So I think the question's kind of trying to get at, you know, hey, how do I build a dashboard that kind of serves multiple purposes, multiple lines of business? I'm an executive though, and I need to digest this, you know, kind of at the highest level.
Yeah. You know, that's a great question. And let me jump into this third section because I'll give some examples, I think, exactly how to do that. And some of it comes into, you know, some of these best practices of how you lay out the data, especially if you've got, I love that example of someone who's coming from an engineering background and they're not as comfortable on the financial side, for instance. You know, you can do some things to simplify the presentation of it so that it's a bit more clear. And one of the first things I would say to just, regardless of the context that you're going after, what your audience is there are some fundamental patterns of how the eye works, how the brain tries to process this data. And, you know, one of them is the Z pattern versus, you know, where you kind of put your dashboard together and you might bury the lead of what's most important. And it's somewhere, you know, in the bottom right corner instead of that top left position. And it plays off of just how the human brain works and how the eye works. I mean, I love this visual of just kind of staring at this and seeing where your eye goes. I mean, it truly does follow this pattern. And sometimes you'll see people ignore this and they'll put the company logo in the top left corner. Everyone already knows the company they're on, and it's wasting that prime real estate on a point you're not trying to drive home. So if you kind of start thinking hierarchically about what's important, you know, what aligns with those, going back to the very beginning, what aligns with the pain points the most, what aligns with the value we're trying to create the most, and then start structuring your data around that. You know, here's an example where it is trying to take that philosophy and use the Z, and everything in this dashboard that I designed is trying to hit on those points. So of in this example, there's seven financial and operational KPIs, but the financial ones are higher priority. Like they're the if those are going bad, everything is struggling, right? So they get the top billing. But even within the four financial KPIs you see at the top, there's a hierarchy there. The most important one is sales. Like that every in this organization, everyone lives and breathes by the sales levels. So you need to let's make that first and then come down into the some of the more contextual things that are helpful, but not as important. So you can kind of see a structure of that Z pattern. That gets into, I think, a good lens to consider is if you look at building a dashboard, you're probably going to be building across one of these four types of objectives. Are you trying to compare something? You're trying to look at the composition of like, what is this comprised of? Are you looking at a time series, looking at chronology, or maybe you're looking at distribution? You're going to see chart types that are going to lend themselves, depending on what your tool is, it's going to default to its own chart type. It might default to a bar or a line. Sometimes that's right, but oftentimes it isn't. But if you start to think, okay, I'm looking at this kind of data, this is going to lend itself to this type of a chart type. Keep that, I think, as a top of mind concept as you're going through and kind of, architecting where things are going to go on the screen, but also how am I going to represent each of those things? And those are kind of key components of it. Another one I wanted to bring up that's kind of fascinating is, and it's a strange word, but it's pre-attentive attributes. And if you haven't come across this, you'll recognize this. It happens to all of us, but it's things that our eyes do when you're looking at a dashboard before your brain starts processing any of the data and the content and the values and the numbers. It's just what is your eye drawn to? And there's 10 different ones you can see here. A classic one is, this color hue example, like where your eye just is drawn to that. Calling something out by, the width of it or the length, your eye is really good at seeing that without reading any of the numbers on your charts and on your dashboards. And that's where you'll see one of the upcoming tips is sometimes removing some of the detail is going to make it a lot more accessible. And going back to that example of an engineering background looking at financial data, sometimes simplifying some of that cluttering detail can convey the basic message of, hey, I'm trying to see what sales are doing. I'm trying to see what my cost of goods sold are doing on a trend basis. And I don't need to be an expert on what's inside that calculation to understand COGS. But oh yeah, I can see the trend we're after here. And this example I love, this is a grid of 2,500 numbers and there's an 8 in there. And if you try to go find it, it's pretty tough. If I use one pre-attentive attribute on the color intensity, you probably can see that before you even read a single number. And it's amazing just how fast your brain can pick up on some of that. And so it's a lot of the defaults you'll see in a lot of these dashboarding tools, they'll default to a million colors and a million different categories. And it gets very busy and very cluttered very fast. And then if you do something like this, you can kind of, simplify it. So this is an example of kind of one of those pre-attentive attributes that you can play off of when you're trying to lead maybe an untrained or unsophisticated audience to, to the point you want to draw their attention to. Part of what I think you can also do to that is avoiding unnecessary detail. Like you're going to see again in, take Tableau. I love Tableau, but when you start building an initial view, it's going to layer in a lot of things on there that are very accurate and complete, but maybe too much so, especially when you put them together in an array of other dashboard elements. So if you start turning off some of the tick marks, some of the redundant access titles, grid lines, you can get an example where, it's obvious that these are fiscal periods, probably for your audience. But your dashboarding tool might want to just put in there the name of that dimension and say it's fiscal periods. Well, that's cluttering it up. It's going to go through and put in tick marks. And sometimes you'll have twice as many of these tick marks and you'll see examples where, you can even get rid of that and just have the numbers on your marks. And sometimes you end up with fewer numbers on the view and it's a clearer, it's easier for the user to get to that destination without some of that supporting detail. If you're going through and you're doing an accounting analysis, you're trying to look at down in the trenches at each row, you're going to want that level. But if you're doing a dashboard, it's probably better to consider pulling back on some of those things. Here's another one that doesn't happen by default in a lot of tools, but it can work really well. So this is a challenge. You probably run into this a lot. You've got a denominator that keeps changing. So imagine you're a growing retail store chain and you're opening up all these hardware stores. And so every period you're opening a few stores. So you've got a changing denominator. But if you fix that height of the comparison and do it on a percent basis out of 100, you can then start to see, okay, even though we only had 200 stores back here in 2022 and now we're at 300, I can see the trend that I'm trying to manage to, which is how do I get the fewest number of stores that aren't performing? You know, and so that's a very simple, basic tactic, but surprisingly, I don't see it as often as it could be used, and it can definitely help with what you're trying to do. Another tactical one, this is really basic, but again, the defaults often will get you in this trap where you have category names that are kind of long, but it oriented your chart vertically to begin with. Just swapping those axes, it sounds really simple, but sometimes you see these really cramped bottom axis on the x-axis, or you rotate the text on a weird angle. Sometimes you just need to think a little differently, get out of the box a bit. Another one, you know, the big awesome number. I'll often put this on just about every dashboard that I build. And sometimes you look at it and think, well, it's pretty obvious. You don't need to make that big. But where it becomes powerful is in the filtering game. So when you get into it and you start drilling down and you're drilling down and using all these cool interactive features, it's a quick, you know, reality check of, does this data make sense? If I filter down all the way to one of my regions in South Texas, but this still says 48 stores and I know I only have 12, that can, you know, set off an alarm warning. And so I find that that's a feature that I use in my discovery phase, but I usually keep it in and I see my customers and clients using it a lot. Like it's a nice, comfortable, sanity check on what I'm doing. Here's another one that is a trap that I think that the tools by default will often push you in. Like you're visualizing a data set and you're color encoding it by, in this case, these different segments. And it'll just create a nice legend for you and color code it all. That almost always is a rough time for the user to try to figure that out. And sometimes you've got to take a different tack and say, maybe I need to use, you know, small multiples and break that out and dedicate a little bit more real estate to each one. And the story might be instantly accessible to my user.
So on that last one, Todd, in color, that one's pretty important to me, and I'm sure I'm not the only one on the call. So I'm one of these males out here that has color blindness. So whenever, mm-hmm. Typical green is good and red is bad, when I see that on a dashboard, it looks like one big brown blob, you know. So kind of any insight around, managing the color palette in the dashboard?
Absolutely. It's going to default you to red and green, the stoplight pattern. That's the common one. And in my experience, most clients want me to use the red and green. And, 10% of males, have trouble differentiating those together when they're side by side. A simple change to a blue and orange can solve that. And even in some of the tools in Tableau, there are colorblind friendly palettes that can do that same alerting function of an orange without resorting to the red, yellow, green that's hard to differentiate. So yeah, that's a great one. You always will run into it, and sometimes you can convince the client that we can go with blue and orange, and sometimes you're going to get forced into the red and green, but keep up the good fight. this one is kind of the last tip in here, which is, I've kind of hit on this throughout the talk, but the very first thing I try to do when I'm sitting down with a new data set is I start with discovery. I just want to look at the data. I want to get an understanding of the shape of the data and figure out, kind of what are my parameters? What can I work with? And so here's an example that kind of plays off of that last slide, but in, 96 seconds, you can just watch how quickly you can go through and just understand the shape of your data. Then you're better equipped when you're going back and you're in some of those early discovery and kind of interview questions. You know what you have available and kind of what your tools are, but here's, just watch what you can do in this case. And I'm pulling in kind of a classic data set here that, looking at it in its raw form, it's hard to understand, what's going on in this data. Let me just, bring it in. I'm using, you know, Tableau, obviously, in this example. And then I'll say, okay, well, let's just, you know, quickly start to visualize it. And there's, you know, all the different visualization types. I'm just using a simple scatter plot to do this one. And now I'm doing, you know, you can see how Tableau is encoding it with all those categories, and it's kind of hard to understand what's happening. So now I'm thinking, well, maybe I can start to filter this a little bit and you know, break out those categories and see what's happening. And I'm starting to see, yeah, there's structure in this data. And this is a classic data set from 1973 that is designed to, you know, for this kind of demo. And then quickly say, hey, let me take this and just build a very, you know, quick discovery dashboard, if you will. And just super super rustic, but helps me kind of get equipped with what's going on here. And so now I'm understanding the shape of what's in this data set, and now I'm gonna, you know, bring back in the raw data just to kind of have it side by side. But you know, there, you know, in literally 90 seconds, I can just get a feel for what's this landscape look like. What are the possibilities? What's lurking inside this data? So I think that's always a good starting point.
I could watch you do that. That's just so therapeutic, watching, you know, someone cook in Tableau and just building out the graphs like in real time, real quick like that. I just kind of put a couple questions for you. You know, I think that's a great approach to start kind of like getting your hands on the data and visualizing the data kind of as you develop, you know, the report. What if, you know, in that case, the data was very structured and very nice looking. What if, you know, it's very unstructured, there's no kind of insight off the bat, or perhaps maybe I'm working with some data that, you know, I'm not familiar with kind of the business, you know, use case perhaps, right? So like,
yeah,
even if I were to get some structured insight, it might not mean much to me as maybe the dashboard developer, you know, kind of depending on the situation, how do you navigate that?
You know, a couple of kind of more widening the toolbox of what I would use, I might use a profiling tool, like take Tableau Prep, for instance. One of the things you can do very easily in that is profile all the different dimensions and measures and just see the shape of it and say, okay, I can see there's some weird, you know, dirty artifact data over here that's skewing things. And, you know, so I'll use either what I just did there, because even though it looks a little like a little bit of effort, just running that raw data in through several different visualization approaches, like I did on that last slide, I can pretty quickly get a sense of what's going on in this data and figure out, you know, what patterns are going to be the best, or what question I need to go ask next to say, hey, I'm looking at this data, and go back to the, you know, the broader data team that you're usually a part of, and go back to one of the upstream data owners and say, hey, is this the typical behavior I should expect on this? Are we going to see this data updating every day or only once a quarter, like I'm seeing in this view? So I think you can learn a lot whether you use a tool like Tableau, whether you use a profiling tool to kind of understand it and definitely see, you know, all the deficiencies in it and where the gotchas are. Or there's almost always every one of these data sets has just some weird malformed data or incomplete data that you know isn't right. And you can kind of surface that quickly if you just put any one of these visual tools on it.
Right.
So, you know, here's a recap. And we were talking in preparing for the session today. I mean, we tried to blend between strategy, some of the different types of dashboards, and then get into some of these tactical best practices. I mean, we could have done this whole section going a lot deeper just on these visualization best practices, because there's a lot more than just the 10. It's kind of like trying to pick your favorite kid to know what to put on this list. But, you know, the parting thought I'll put out here before opening up to questions, you know, I love this quote about resisting the temptation to put everything in. And in fact, the reverse is probably where success lies. And I think that's probably the biggest pattern I've seen in walking into a company and looking at their, logging into their Tableau server and just looking at everything that's there. They never suffer from not having enough dashboards or enough features on the dashboards. It's usually too much, and it's off mark from what the pain points are. So if you can kind of think that way and remove until you've gone too far, and then add back a little bit, you're probably gonna, you know, get there. So,
Yeah, it's going to be my last question. Just kind of like, as you're simplifying, how do you know when you've hit that right mark? Have I simplified enough? Or, I guess it's like you add back in, I guess, if it's a little too simple, right? Or, kind of like that balance.
yeah, I had that exact scenario on a project where, on one of the views on the dashboard, I had stripped away a bunch of the context on the axes and the tick marks. But the reason was it was just trying to show on a region by region basis where are we trending on these on whether or not the what portion of the of that group is falling below the base of the KPIs. And it we went back and forth, but it ended up being the best way to just show that line and color code it at the end. And in a glance, you could understand, oh man, it looks like this northeast region is really struggling. And then the meat of the dashboard was all the detail around why that was struggling. But it took a bit of back and forth to land on just the right amount of context on the detail to say, oh yeah, this is doing its job. It's kind of getting the viewer to go, oh, I want to dig in more on why I'm seeing that one trend on the left.
Yeah. And maybe one last question, kind of feeding off that, Todd, is, how do you bake in interactivity into the dashboard? Is that totally tool dependent? Is that dashboard type dependent, right? How much do you want your end users, kind of muddling around in the dashboard that you're deploying?
You definitely the interactivity question is fascinating to me because it goes back to my slide on is this a discovery dashboard where every single I'll pull this back up again. Every single thing, almost without exception, is a filter. Like when I'm doing this, I'll have as many filters as possible, and it's really wide open. When I get into the reporting dashboards, I tend to pull back on some of the interactivity that can lead the audience astray and kind of get them into a cul-de-sac where they've got so many filters applied, they don't know what they're looking at, and it creates a bit of unnecessary friction. And so then I'll kind of limit it to a bit more, let me zoom in on this one. So I'll put a little bit more focus in on a very dedicated, filtering area and bring up the interactivity in the context that we want them to use it. And then when you get to the storytelling, there's often very limited interactivity. So it's kind of a blend in there of how sophisticated that audience is and what I think they can handle.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, I think that's taken us pretty close to the end. So I think, kind of what's clear after kind of walking through Todd, is just, there's a lot that goes into, designing some effective, data-driven dashboards, right? I'm gonna tell a story, I'm reporting the news, I'm trying to uncover some insights that might not be known, Sure, maybe, some analysts can just slap together, a dashboard and get it going. But, I think there's a lot that goes into it for it to be effective and for it to stick. So, thank you, Todd. I would like to open it up, Kalia, to the floor, to the audience for any kind of open Q&A. If there's kind of any questions out there from the audience, just
Yeah,
give
we actually, yep.
it.
This has been so good. We do have a question, but I'm vibing this session, Todd. This is fascinating. So Connor, I did not know that you were colorblind, and you didn't know that I was an art major in college. And I feel like I just sat through a typography lesson that we would have had. Like this is, I'm loving this. So all right, let's get to the question.
Well,
So
you learn to
Claire.
manage. Yeah, so it looks like we have a question out there from Claire. Any Todd, this is for you. Any tips for guiding stakeholders when they're trying to jump straight to solutions or a specific report type? Kind of going back to the big picture questions you asked initially. So maybe it kind of sounds like, hey, maybe someone thinks they want a storytelling dashboard, but they want something else, right? Kind of how do you guide your stakeholders or challenge your stakeholders?
A couple of things. It's a great question, and that's the reality of it. You got to navigate that. I'll really hone in on this kind of three question script and get them to be as verbose as possible in how much they'll tell me about what they need before trying to jump into the designs. And I'll also ask them, show me what you're using right now. And it's often something sitting in Excel, but I'll try to hit that sweet spot of making them feel heard. Everyone's got a strong opinion about this stuff, and they've got to get it on the table. But I'll try to get the focus on in that early stage of getting basically to this document and getting this circulated among representatives from all levels of the stakeholders to get them to agree that yeah, this is what we need to do. And then when I do the first version like this, where I start to show them, this is where those strong opinions on like how they want things to be laid out will come out, or they won't come out. And sometimes they're kind of an open book and want you to just, you know, guide the way. And other times say, no, I'm really interested in this this visualization type. And sometimes I'll, you know, I try to always have that beginner's mind and just learn, okay, is this the right way? And if it is, like, yeah, great, this is a new direction. Or if they're going down that classic, you know, cul-de-sac that they're going to get stuck in, like, oh, let me show you another way and let's just decide. And oftentimes when they see it side by side, they'll actually go with, you can kind of lead them to the the right answer, if you will.
Very good. Thanks, Todd. Thank you, Claire, for the question.
Yeah, that looks like that's about it. But thank you for this great session. We're getting some really good feedback in the chat and some private messages as well, that this has been super helpful. It's just like, it was just packed with great tips. So I think, Todd, we're going to need to redo this. We're going to need to do like a V2 on this one, because this is really, really interesting.
Well, I'd love to do one on that last part, the best practices. Easily you could take an hour and go into more examples of each of those in more depth. And happy, anyone that's got a question for me, you can find me on all the usual spots. A couple of those dashboards that I was showing, examples, you can grab them on my Tableau Public. So yeah, thank you everybody for taking the time today. This is a great topic. Love talking about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Todd. Todd's an absolute rock star when it comes to this stuff. You know, I only wish I could be as talented with him as him, kind of in some of these tools, you know, how he works on it in real time, but super effective. Definitely knows how to make dashboards stick. I think
this is great. And the chat agrees, by the way. V2, we're hearing it. We're hearing from the people. We're doing the V2. So stay tuned for that next. But thank you so much for leading us through today, Connor. And Todd, thank you for sharing your expertise. This has been a fantastic session. And we'll follow up with everybody. We welcome you to follow us on YouTube, by the way. That's where we're going to post the recording of this video. And then we will also, you can visit our new website, freshly redesigned. So for those of us that are in marketing, kind of a big deal. Check out our data and analytics services over there. And we have Todd on as one of our esteemed guides. And I wish everybody a wonderful day. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for joining me today.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you, Kelly, for having us. Thank
You're
you,
welcome.
Everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Have a good day.
Bye.
Bye.